names of those victims, he would not identify, nor would he identify where they were originally from.
The investigation continues into Israel Keyes after his death. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, December 3rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a new emergency resource for the city of Unalaska.
The whole idea of this buoy is to protect us from the disabled and distressed vessels that get brought to us. We become their caretaker and kind of puts us at risk.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net. And by BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
An autopsy is being performed on the body of confessed killer Israel Keyes, who died in an apparent suicide in his cell at the Anchorage Correctional Complex on Sunday. Keyes, who admitted murdering Anchorage barista Samantha Koenig and a Vermont couple, was being prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office. Authorities are still investigating his connection to other missing people in other states. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has the story.
About 6:30 Sunday morning, the Alaska State Troopers Alaska Bureau of Investigation got a call about Keyes' death. Keyes was being held at the Anchorage Correctional Complex while prosecutors with the U.S. Attorney's Office built their case against him for the murder of Anchorage barista Samantha Koenig. Beth Ipson is a spokesperson for the troopers.
We had an investigator respond and investigate, and it revealed that 34-year-old Israel Keyes, who was an inmate at the complex, he passed away due to an apparent suicide. The state medical examiner's office responded and took possession of the body.
Troopers have not yet released details regarding the suicide. Ipson says results from the autopsy are expected soon. Kevin Feldis is with the U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage. He's part of the team that's been interrogating Keyes. He says in discussions with investigators, Keyes confessed to the kidnapping and murder of Koenig. Keyes abducted Koenig from the Common Grounds coffee stand in Anchorage on February 1st. Feldis says Keyes also admitted to killing Bill and Lorraine Currier, a couple from Essex, Vermont. And Feldis says Keyes admitted to killing at least five others.
The names of those victims he would not identify, nor would he identify where they were originally from. And so we don't know if they were from Washington or perhaps one of the surrounding states. He also admitted to us having disposed of a body of someone that he had killed and disposing the body in New York. Again, he would not reveal the name of that victim or where they were from. He also indicated that there were other victims, but as of this past week, those discussions were ongoing regarding who they were and trying to convince Keyes to provide additional details.
Feldis says conversations with Keyes supplied investigators with many helpful details that they'll use to continue their investigation into his other crimes.
That will probably involve weeks, months, and perhaps years of continued investigative work. Of course, Mr. Keyes was the single best source of information about what he had done.
With Keyes gone, though, Feldis says investigators will be relying on the information they have. He says authorities were getting new information from Keyes as late as last week.
And there may be things that we may never be able to uncover that only Mr. Keyes knows about.
The Anchorage Police Department partnered with the U.S. Attorney's Office on the investigation of Keyes. Chief Mark Mew says Keyes' death frees up authorities to release information they had been withholding from the public, and they hope that may provide help with other unsolved cases.
Perhaps there are people who have information they didn't realize it was significant at the time. People are maybe going to be rethinking missing person cases around the country. What we've amassed and what they have need to be matched up with each other, and that may happen now quicker.
Mew says the FBI has compiled the records of Keyes' movements based on travel documents, purchases, and financial transactions to try to track every place he's been in the past decade. They hope the travel timeline will provide clues to the crimes that Keyes implied he'd committed. But Mew echoes Feldis, saying Keyes' death is a blow to investigations. The question looms, how was a high-profile prisoner like Keyes able to kill himself while in custody? Director of the Alaska Department of Corrections, Brian Brandenburg, says there are procedures in place that were supposed to keep Keyes from killing himself.
In Mr. Keyes' case, he actually was in segregation. Typically, most high-profile cases, those folks are kept segregated from general population. And everyone, when they into the jail, within the first 24 hours, they get a medical screening. And then if there's any signs or indicators that someone is thinking about wanting to hurt themselves, they're referred to our mental health staff.
Brandon Berg says Keyes did not show signs that he might commit suicide. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
When vessels run into trouble along the Great Circle shipping route, they often end up in Unalaska. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal reports that a new emergency resource should help provide those ships safe harbor.
Unalaska has plenty of support services for disabled ships, but only so much dock space. And with the area's rough weather, simply dropping anchor isn't secure enough. That's why Unalaska has deployed a new emergency mooring buoy in Broad Bay. Mayor Shirley Marcourt says the system is valued at $10.2 million, but it was almost entirely funded with grants and donations of hardware and professional services.
You know, it took 2 years to get every one of these pieces together and, you know, trying to do it with as little city money as possible because, you know, the whole idea of this buoy is to protect us from the disabled and distressed vessels that get brought to us. We become their caretaker and kind of puts us at risk.
That was the case with the Golden Seas, a cargo ship that went adrift near Adak in 2010. It was carrying 500,000 pounds of oil and fuel, and it posed a major spill risk to Unalaska because it was too large to tie up in town. So the 700-foot vessel sat anchored in Broad Bay while its engine was fixed, with a tugboat on hand to monitor it. And even if it had been able to dock in Unalaska, it might have been a problem. City Manager Chris Laddick says the unexpected arrival of a large shipping vessel can disrupt the port's tight schedule.
Maybe it's a critical time of year. They take up dock space, and then you have a huge impact to our economic engine, which is the port.
Laddick says the city wanted a dedicated space for ships to go during emergencies.
We came up with the idea of having a mooring buoy away from the docks that you could put the ship on, and then they could order their parts, make their repairs, and then get underway and get out of here.
Marquardt and Laddick say the biggest donor to the mooring system was Shell Oil. Shell provided 3 surplus anchors to hold the buoy in place, and they had their contractor ship them from Louisiana for free. Shell's icebreaker-class anchor handler, the IVIC, stopped in Unalaska on its way out of the Beaufort Sea after the Arctic drilling season ended. The crew spent 2 days helping the city install the system at no cost. And in the future, the Coast Guard will maintain it for free using their buoy tenders. The mooring buoy complements Unalaska's emergency towing kit, which was developed about 5 years ago with the Aleutian Islands Risk Assessment Team. John Brown is a coordinator from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, and he says the towing system can be used to bring broken-down vessels to the new buoy. He also says the Risk Assessment Team will test that out when they gather in Unalaska for their annual towing drill next fall. In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
It's been nearly a month since Election Day, and the race for House District 34 has finally come to an end, with a four-term legislator losing his seat to a political newcomer. Margaret Friedenauer of KHNS has more.
After a recount in Juneau this morning, Republican Representative Bill Thomas of Haines has lost his state House seat to Sitka Democrat Jonathan Christ Tompkins. Only 32 votes out of more than 8,000 separate the two candidates. Christ Tompkins was in Juneau to observe the recount and said it was tedious.
It was watching 8,232 pieces of paper being fed into optical scanner machines.
But the Democrat wasn't nervous. It seemed apparent a couple weeks after the election, when the bulk of the absentee ballots were counted, that Christ Tompkins would maintain a lead. A final vote count of overseas ballots solidified his win, followed by certification of the election. But the difference of votes between the candidates was still less than half a percentage point, within the range for a state-funded recount. Thomas waited until the deadline on November 28th to officially ask for the recount. Both candidates picked up a handful of votes during this morning's count, but the final tally did not change the outcome. Christ Tompkins' final vote count is 4,130 to Thomas's 4,098. The winner said the recount finally closes the book on the drawn-out election.
This is the point of punctuation on the election, and it's a relief to have a sense of finality with the whole episode.
Thomas said he was not surprised by the outcome of the recount.
it's good to have it resolved and be done with.
Thomas signaled in recent weeks that he knew a recount would not likely change the election outcome. Staff was already packing up his legislative office on Main Street in Haines, although it won't officially close until mid-January. But he also said despite his first reaction the day after the election, when he said he would not run for office again, he said Monday he will leave that possibility open. He said he's interested in getting into fish politics and we'll see where that leads. And unlike some of his off-the-cuff remarks toward Chris Tompkins a day after the final vote count, Thomas offered more practical advice to his opponent on Monday.
I wish him good luck. He's going to need it, and I want to know how he's going to fund all these projects. But your campaign promises are hard to keep.
Chris Tompkins said he's been hiring staff and gearing up for his move to Juneau. He said while the recount is the end of the election, he's still anxiously awaiting his swearing-in on January 15th to begin his term as representative for House District 34. Reporting in Haines, I'm Margaret Friednauer.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the annual Talkeetna Bachelor Auction.
I have a Bachelor Auction baby in my arms. Margaret is the mom. She won the Wilderness Woman Contest, 3 years ago now? And this is the result right here.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
A 5.8 magnitude earthquake shook Anchorage at 4:42 this afternoon. The earthquake was centered 27 miles directly west of Anchorage in Cook Inlet, right next to Tyonek. Janelle Baker works for the native village of Tyonek as an administrative assistant. She says at first, it sounded like a tractor was going by her window at work.
I looked out the window and there was nothing and it started going harder and my daughter was in here with me and I yelled at her and I told her, get out, and we start running and after it starts shaking even harder. And so me and her and another coworker ran outside and we waited for a little bit and watched it, and it was still, the lights were still shaking in here in the tribal center. And so we just waited until it got done and came back inside.
Baker says there was no damage to her building, but the internet in town went out immediately, so she's wondering if the earthquake played a role in that. Several smaller aftershocks followed the initial earthquake. Electric power costs are going up in many areas, but in McGrath, electric rates jumped about 35% on November 1st. That is a temporary increase. Vicki Oddie is chair and CEO of the Alaska Native Corporation, MTNT, which owns McGrath's electric utility.
We have not had a rate increase in the utility for 28 years. And by the rules of the regulatory commission that regulates it, utilities are supposed to be regulated, and they do have to submit rate increases. I believe it's every 3 to 5 years. So, you know, we're playing catch up, and it's, you know, unfortunate in this economy that this is happening. But at the same time, I'm hoping that the community is preparing for it by looking for ways to reduce their electrical costs.
The Regulatory Commission of Alaska must approve any rate increase. Oddie says an application for an increase was submitted in October, and the RCA has allowed an interim rate hike while a permanent increase is under review. Oddie says a typical McGrath home pays about $150 per month for power, and with the increase, at least another $50 will be added to that. Oddie says the cost of buying fuel has escalated from $500,000 to over $1 million annually, and the utility had to make the adjustment to a higher rate. McGrath is located on the Upper Kuskokwim River. Fuel is shipped in by barge. Electricity rates are coming down in the Fairbanks area. Golden Valley Electric customers from Delta Junction to Fairbanks and Healy will see their bills drop 11% to 13%, depending on service levels as of December 1st. Golden Valley is benefiting from additional power from Anchorage, natural gas-fired energy that's less expensive than oil-generated electricity in Fairbanks. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
A new deal with Chugach Electric is allowing more natural gas-generated electricity to flow to Fairbanks over the Northern Intertie Transmission Line. The Anchorage utility has ratcheted back the amount of power it offers Fairbanks in recent years due to gas supply and energy demand issues. But Golden Valley Electric President and CEO Corey Borgeson says GVEA was able to secure an agreement.
Asking, begging, going down there and tell me we really need help. We have friends down in Anchorage that want to help Golden Valley. I think they maybe have heard our plight. So we're thinking that they kind of scrounged up some fuel and made commitments, but they haven't been willing to do so in the past.
Borgeson says the contract with Chugach runs through March 2015, a bridge for lower-cost power until the Healy Clean Coal Plant comes online. He says Anchorage Gas and Healy coal-fired sources represent similar output and comparable savings at current prices. Also in the local rate mix is the availability of a diesel alternative for Golden Valley's oil-fired plants in Fairbanks and North Pole.
HAGO is a heavier fuel than diesel, and there's about a 10% difference in the efficiency, the BTU value of the HAGO versus the diesel. So basically it costs us about 10% more to burn diesel rather than HAGO.
Golden Valley gets HAGO from Flint Hills, but the local refinery has been unable to supply it recently due to a leaky tank. Borgeson says repairs are nearing completion and HAGO will be available again. Another factor playing into the power rates is GVA's new Eva Creek wind farm at Healy. Borgeson says the capital cost of the $93 million facility will begin to be reflected in rates next summer.
You're going to see some increases. It'll start in July for the utility charge to start putting some of the Eva Creek costs into the utility charge.
Borgeson says the net effect of Eva Creek will be reduced rates. It's expected to lower annual power generation costs between $2 and $4 million, depending on the price of the fuel sources wind replaces. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
A Bethel court magistrate has rescheduled the trials of 22 Alaska natives who are charged with illegal fishing during a week king salmon run. Magistrate Bruce Ward reset the trials for the subsistence fishermen to begin April 15th. The fisherman's attorney, James J. Davis Jr., had sought to consolidate the trials into one case to allow two specialists on Yupik culture, Eskimo culture, to act as pro bono experts for all of the defendants. Davis says Ward did not officially rule on the consolidation request in a hearing on Friday, but agreed that the experts would not have to testify in all of the cases. Early in our series, Being Young in Rural Alaska, from the producers of Kids These Days, we learned about efforts to reintroduce Indigenous languages through school programs. At the Lower Kuskokwim School District, they have a different challenge: figuring out the best way to teach reading and writing to kids who are already living in two languages. LKSD is the heart of Yupik country. One quarter of the certified teachers are Yupik, the greatest percentage of Indigenous educators in any district in Alaska. The district is rolling out a new method for teaching its bilingual students called the dual language model. KYUK's Sophie Ivan has more.
LKSD's mission statement says in part that their students will be bilingual and successful in both Yupik and American English languages and cultures. The Yupik language specialists there map out the curriculum in Yupik, mirroring the English teaching and evaluation materials. Veronica Winkelman, or Adan, is one of three full-time specialists.
So it's not the curriculum, it's the delivery method.
Adan says the dual language model has to be demonstrated and practiced by the adults in the school equally.
We're asking English-speaking teachers to take Yuchtun classes and to learn Yuchtun phrases.
The high school students from Shefornik have recorded Yupik phrases and posted them onto LKSD's website for the English-speaking teachers. Directions like, please line up, take your paper out, or it's time for lunch. The teaching model's main component is to have the students work in pairs on their activity or practice worksheets.
So when you go into a dual language classroom, you will see kids with their pair.
Working together is said to encourage active learning for all students. Student comprehension is then checked three separate times. Rita Joki, a first-year kindergarten teacher in Nabaska. Joki says teachers use the language of the student as the primary language of instruction. So, for example, when students are speaking English as they enter kindergarten, the main language of instruction will be English for reading and writing. The same applies to the Yupik-speaking students. The first test of the method is for students to be able to write a full page for Yupik learners and half a page for English learners in each respective language. Yupik language specialist Adan.
Not only do you want the kids to know what you've taught them, but you want them to be able to apply their learning in a different format. So it's like deeper learning and deeper practice.
Napasquek School Principal Talbert Bentley say they've been using the dual language delivery method since last year.
Our teachers have really bought into it and they're really going gangbusters implementing it.
In the dual language learning model, students continue to learn reading, writing, science, and social studies in both languages into the sixth grade. Russian Orthodox priest Father Nikolai also serves as Napasquek's chairman of the local advisory school board.
This is what we tell our students. Our world is changing, and we need to learn the Western ways. Our parents were forced to learn the English language, and it is important to know English in today's world. We also continue to teach the Yupik ways of survival in our own language, as the two are connected.
He says the end goal is to prepare students like his own to be grounded in the Yupik culture and to succeed in the Western world as well. With help from Jessica Cochran, I'm Sophie Van in Napasquek.
For 364 days, they cost nothing, but for one special night a year, Talkeetna's bachelors fetch a hefty price. And this year's 32nd annual Talkeetna Bachelor Auction was the most successful ever. KTNA's Melis Cody has more.
The average price for a bachelor this year was $335. Many of the bachelors, like Dave Keisha, were surprised by their value on the auction block.
Paid a whole lot of money for me. $700.
Allison Kier, a woman from Anchorage in the Army Reserve and a logistics coordinator for Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, was pleased with her purchase.
Just hit it off with Dave and great chatter, and he's just very good. Yeah, actually, you had good conversation. Yeah, just fun, and I'm, you know, when you're the over 40 group.
I'm actually really glad you bought me. Thank you.
So anyway, yeah, we just hit it off. And friends and stuff. So I said, no, he's not getting away from me. Not this weekend.
All proceeds from the event are donated to Talkeetna's nonprofits, with the biggest donations going to groups helping women and children in crisis. Traditionally, the event has been very tongue-in-cheek. It was invented as a stunt 32 years ago to draw bigger winter crowds to the town's historic bar, the Fairview Inn. However, increasingly real matches are being made. Bachelors who are overlooked by their jaded female neighbors or forced to compete for a small pool of local women are given a bigger audience this first Saturday of every December. Once purchased by a woman, the winning bidder is promised a flower, photo with their bachelor, a drink, and a dance. The rest is up to the couple. Several marriages have their origins in this event. During the Wilderness Women Contest, an event held the afternoon of the same day, Eric Denkelwalter, a spectator, proudly held his granddaughter, Rosemary. Her parents, Margaret and Kelly, met during this same event 3 years ago.
I have a bachelor auction baby in my arms. Margaret is the mom. She won the Wilderness Woman Contest, 3 years ago now? And this is the result right here.
The bachelor auction is a great place for women to find a man, but it's also a great place for women to hang out with other women. There was a lot of camaraderie in the Sheldon Community Arts Hangar as over 200 women gathered to bid on 41 bachelors. The hall was so packed that hopeful women were even being turned away at the door. The venue took on a Vegas meets Talkeetna feel as groups of women plotted and strategized, setting bidding limits, trading auction cards to procure their lucky number, and offering to pool money together so their friends could purchase their favorite picks. Well-dressed and often scantily dressed men energized the event as they strutted down a catwalk. Although it takes a lot of courage for these shy and reticent men to put themselves out on display, some said the jitters actually set in later.
I don't know. I just felt more nervous after I got done on stage than before for some reason. So,
for all the fun, the focus was still on charity. Talkeetna's bachelors raised over $14,000 for local charities. Most of the bachelors worked hard to acquire donations from businesses and sold with additional generous prizes like scenic flights, gift certificates, and handmade items. Lindsay Hall, the biggest philanthropist of the night, purchased 5 bachelors, including Tommy Potter, the most expensive man of the evening, for $900.
I had to have the hat. I had to have the hat.
Tommy came with his own well-crafted fur hat made from the first coyote he ever shot and adorned with bear claws from a bear he took with a bow and arrow.
13 is my lucky number. I'm thinking I should go home with 13, don't you? I couldn't pass that up with his bear claws and, you know, his, anyway, it was real cute. I needed to make some donations, so this was a great cause.
From Talkeetna, where the odds are good, but the goods are getting more expensive, this is Melis Cody.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Daisha Eaton and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, Margaret Friedenauer in Haines, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Sophie Ivan in Napaskiak, and Melis Cody in Talkeetna. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
And by
Older Persons Action Group, promoting well-being for Alaska seniors and their families, including publication of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper. Membership information at 1-800-478-1059. Enroll now and get a career in less than a year in refrigeration, marine oiler, heavy equipment, or welding. Additional training programs and course information online at avtech.edu. Classes in Seward and Anchorage start in January. This message sponsored by Avtech.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.